Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. We are opening this hour by speaking with our friend Doug Keck, as we do every Monday. Doug has an update, a personal career update, that he wants to share with all of us. Simply put, he has announced that he will be retiring from his administrative duties on the network, EWTN. However, he will continue to expand his capacities for media evangelization, a work that is always near and dear to his heart. Doug has been a pillar, a bulwark of truth and also of evangelization. Many people across the world, myself included, owe our salvation, owe our fidelity to the Catholic faith, to the work of people like Doug Keck, who made sure that the Catholic gospel permeated the airwaves, the global digital sphere, making it so that the gospel of Jesus Christ could be accessed more than ever before and more expansively than ever before. And so Doug will join us to talk about not just the work he has done, but also how rubbing shoulders with amazing figures like Mother Angelica, Al Cresta, Father Benedict Rochelle, and their like, how these people together have cooperated into building this grand work that we now see as Catholic media evangelization. Because the truth of the matter is, the American Church has become the leading light. It's become the force at the forefront of evangelization, digital evangelization. I say this without exaggeration, and my predecessor and mentor, Al Cresta, would have said this in a heartbeat too. There is no other nation and no other collective national church across the world that is taking all of the calls of the Second Vatican Council, particularly with the new evangelization, as seriously as the church here in America. We have much to be grateful for and therefore much to do. We go on from there to look at some conversations we had at Acton University 2025 once again. We speak with Father Roger Landry, no stranger to this program, about embracing the entrepreneurial vocation. And then finally, we talk with Andreas Wittmer, also a dear friend, about a theology of business, an ethic of business, doing business in a Christian way, principled entrepreneurship. Because this is the approach that puts human dignity and flourishing at the forefront. All of us are called to this. All this after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Monday, June 30th. It's the Feast of the First Martyrs of Rome. Today's news brought to you by Ave Maria University. Your vocation location is at avemaria.edu. A marathon voting session is happening in the Senate, and it holds a so-called votorama on President Trump's big, beautiful bill. Senate Majority Leader John Thune is ready to get the voting process moving along.
It's been a long debate. I know people are weary, but at the end of the day, we want to get this done.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer went after Republicans on the Senate floor.
Senate Republicans have to decide, choose the American people or bow down to Donald Trump and his coterie of billionaires.
It remains to be seen if Republicans have enough votes to get the massive tax and spending package passed. Senate clerks completed the full reading of the huge tax and spending package Sunday afternoon, which cleared the way for up to 20 hours of debate. Canada's plans to collect a digital services tax targeting U.S. technology firms has been rescinded. It comes after President Trump said the U.S. was ending all trade talks because of the tax. New York City Mayor Eric Adams says his political rival supports Hamas. Adams says Democratic Socialist Zohan Mandami has shown his support for Hamas, and Jewish voters should take note.
Clearly he has, and I think that Jewish voters are going to do an analysis to determine exactly where he stands on these important issues.
In an interview on NBC News' Meet the Press, Mandami refused to condemn the Globalize the Intifada slogan. Mandami is now the favorite to win the general election after defeating former Governor Andrew Cuomo in the Democratic primary. Adams is running for re-election as an independent. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Joining us as he does every Monday is our friend from EWTN, Doug Hecht, who has recently announced that he will be retiring from his administrative duties as president and chief operating officer of EWTN. Doug, I want to say thank you for making the time to be with us today, and also ahead of our conversation to thank you for your illustrious service to the work of evangelization and your contribution to media evangelization especially.
Well, all I can say is I'm hoping I'll have more time for those kind of things. That's part of the idea. but I'll still, I enjoy, you know, my first love was broadcasting. That's what I got into for radio when I was in my late teens and then cable television. So this is an opportunity for me to step away from the more administrative things, have more time for my family. And then also give an opportunity to the great team we have who've been making me look good for a number of years, their opportunity to spread their wings and do what they can do. And I said to some people, you know, I always believed wherever I went, I made things better. And when I left, I made things better. So I think, you know, that's the idea. And, you know, we've got a great team there, lovers of Mother Angelica. Peter Gagnon and Enrique De Pratt on the Spanish side, and certainly also John Elson, who's been responsible for so many of those great international programs and documentaries that we've produced over the years, and Patrick Campbell at TOC, and all the great people who I've worked with over the years in Religious Catalog, Dory and Frank Lork, and there's too many people to name, but Len Marino and his beautiful crew with the making everything look so good. So, you know, it's in great hands, and I got a great opportunity, thanks to Michael, to Warsaw, to continue to do the Bookmark show and the Spitzer show and even the show I do on the Catholic Sphere on theology with Colin Donovan once in a while, and still be able to do this program if you'd like me to be on, and Teresa, if she would as well, and maybe some other things down the road. Who knows? It depends on how things play out.
Well, needless to say, I will be glad to keep having you on. I greatly enjoy our conversations. And in fact, I want to, you know how you and I talk about the intersection of reason and culture with the faith that has been revealed by Christ. How did you came to that position in your life in terms of your faith through a difficult journey? And I think for the interest of our listeners, if you could just share how you got there.
Well, I guess, you know, without telling the old, you know, it all began at a 5,000-watt radio station in Fresno, California, from those who remember the Mary Tyler Moore Show, when they asked Ted Baxter how it all began. No, for me, it was, I guess, you know, I was raised Catholic, but I wasn't Mr. Catholic, but I went to Catholic high school, and the girl I fell in love with and ultimately married, Terry, and we've been together between marriage and going out together, I think it's 52 years now, you know, she kind of got me onto the straight and narrow, and we talk about the idea of working on so many things and really getting a lot of opportunities to do a lot of interesting things, working with the Yankees and the Mets and Mickey Mantle and launching channels and working with some other people, you know, some, you know, semi-well-known and those kinds of things, and being around people who were well-known and were so very well-off, or being working for the man who just passed away, who was a genius and a visionary for media. That was Charles Dolan, who started HBO, and, of course, people might hear about Jimmy Dolan a lot now, his son, who's has the Knicks and the Rangers and the Madison Square Garden and built that new facility out in Las Vegas, for those who pay attention to those things. So I was very lucky to have a lot of those things, and out of that, you know, kind of came starting to think that, you know, this is great, but is there something else? And we went on a marriage encounter, and that really kind of opened it up. I went on a Casillo even more so. And so it was really that idea of kind of like just saying, as I've said before, you know, these things. You know, I remember Father Benedict said, you know, money doesn't buy you happiness, it buys you comfort.
Right.
And so you realize that, oh, this is okay, this is really good in a lot of ways, but it's really not satisfying. And so I started realizing I was being pulled to something else, and that something else became Went from marriage and counter and teaming to moving my entire family down to Alabama, which was a big deal, especially for my poor wife, because she was she was the oldest daughter in the family, and that was still all there. My brother, I didn't really have any relatives, so it wasn't a big deal for me anymore to be on the island. So, yeah, it was one of those things where you just kind of felt like, okay, there should be something more. And, you know, it felt like we were being pulled to do that, and that was something as a family we were called to do. And, you know, we have no doubt it was. At the same time, it wasn't always easy. It wasn't easy to do all those things and to come to a new culture, you know, from you come, you know, as I kidded, you know, I had three strikes against me. I was Catholic. I was from New York. And the third one you wouldn't believe, but I was a Notre Dame fan, and so those out in Alabama, those are fighting words. So it's much better even now, but it was kind of funny at the time.
And throughout your illustrious career, I mean, Doug, you know full well, I owe my conversion to Catholic radio and TV, and so you were in the background of making sure that that content reached people like me, even halfway across the world in Malaysia. And so, rightly, you've become a pillar alongside names like Mother Angelica, Al Cresta, our dear late friend, Father Benedict Rochelle, and you've joined the cohort of people.
No,
like that.
You give me way too much credit to put me in that pantheon.
Well, I'm
you
being
know, they're in, they're in the pantheon. I'm in the entryway. You know, I'm out there in the narthex. You know, on the way in, you might see me there.
But what I'd like to ask is if you could share the encounter of rubbing shoulders with these individuals with that exact same mission, like you mentioned, starting off in this struggle, but knowing that this work was for the good.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously Mother Angelica, you know, meeting her, and, you know, and it was interesting too, because I was not, I was very much into the Scott Hahn kind of tapeworm, kind of apologetics, Carl Keating, Catholic Answers, Father Rutler, those kinds of people. That's who I really was interested in what they had to say. And then Benedict Rochelle as well. Who was also very into apologetics, just in a different style.
Yeah.
You know, and I really came to appreciate Mother more and more as I worked with her and saw the kind of person she was, the kind of person that she, the way she loved Jesus, and the things that she would do, and how self-effacing she actually was. So that was always a great insight. You know, obviously I got to work with Al Cresta over the years through Ave Maria. We were actually on the CRA at one time together for a period of time, and we always used to get together. I think I've said this before. Whenever there was we'd have our radio conference, he and I would always make sure we had lunch together. Just the two of us, just to kind of talk about what's going on and what do you think and where are things headed or those kinds of things, because I'd like to believe, I know how much I appreciated his insights. I'd like to believe that he had some feeling towards mine being able to contribute something as well. And so, you know, those people, and again, what you end up with in Father Benedict and Father Rutler and Dubé, and I mean, there's so many, people I think of who I got to meet, and you know, and so many of them because of the book show as well, and working with them, you know, what they said still it sits in there, and you know, when things happen or go on, you know, somebody gave me a tie once that said, you know, I'm you know, my life is a movie quote, you know, because I always quote movies, you know, I'm not, you know, and so and it's between movies and them. You know, the kind of is the way that, you know, so many things come to mind when situations are happening that are so appropriate to deal with issues, especially problematic issues in our life and in the church and in our faith.
Yeah. And what a testimony it has been to the amazing work of salvation of souls across the world. So, again, I want to say thank you. We will continue these weekly conversations. My guest has been Doug Keck, President and COO of EWTN. I ask you to pray for Doug's continued work and also the work of EWTN. Doug has announced that he will be retiring from administrative duties as President and COO of EWTN, but he will evangelize continually on EWTN. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
For over 40 years, Leader Business in Ann Arbor has delivered top-quality copiers, printers, scanners, and software solutions, all backed by expert service. Rooted in faith and integrity, they ensure your operations run smoothly with fast response times and proactive maintenance. Join the many Catholic-owned organizations that trust Leader Business. Visit leaderbusiness.com or call 734-253-2534. Leader Business. Equip. Serve. Support.
Looking for a retreat venue for your youth group, sports team, ministry, or staff event? St. Francis Retreat Center in DeWitt sits on a picturesque 95-acre property complete with three large conference rooms, two chapels, two dining rooms with commercial kitchens, meeting spaces for smaller groups, overnight lodging, and a professional staff to make your event a success. Call 517-669-8321 or visit stfrancis.ws to book your event today.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. As I've mentioned, coming to you from Acton University 2025, where I'm truly blessed to meet some of the brightest and most precise minds when it comes to the acumen of faith at the intersection of reason, culture, politics, economics. Joining me to share his wisdom is Monsignor Roger Landry, no stranger to this program. He's a priest of the Diocese of Fall River and national director of Pontifical Mission Societies in the United States, and he's also teaching courses at Acton University 2025, Christian Mission and Integral Human Development and Entrepreneurial Vocation, which is what we're talking about. Father, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Great to be with you, Marcus. I'm doing great.
So, Father, this notion of being entrepreneurial as a Catholic, as a Christian, when the temptation to become isolationist, you know, the Benedict option, is all too real, especially in the face of skepticism and pessimism about what's going on in the world. The fact of the matter is the entrepreneurial spirit of man, that innovative quality, is inherent to the Christian call. So I'd like to begin there and have you present to us why that is.
So for Christians, our fundamental vocation that Jesus gave us is not to withdraw, not to run away, not to hide ourselves behind a tall wall. Our fundamental Christian vocation is to be salt of the earth. You got to be out there among people if you're going to live out the mission that Jesus characterizes by salt, which is to give flavor to everything, to preserve from corruption, and actually to be a fire starter in the ancient world. I won't explain that. It's still a form of energy in part of the developing world today. And then light, to illumine, light of the world, yeah, to illumine and to warm and to be leaven. That one Christian on a workplace, one Christian in a school setting, one Christian family in a neighborhood is enough to lift everybody up. But we've got to go out for that. And the reason why the Lord has given us that spiritual vocation is because of our nature. He's made us in His image. And an entrepreneur is somebody who takes something on, literally.
Uh-huh.
We don't duck it. We don't try to pass the buck. We say, there's a problem here. How can I, with your help, Lord, fix
right.
that problem? And so that innovative aspect of our human character, that problem-solving dimension for which the Lord has given us both reason as well as will, so that we're able to choose to do something that's actually going to improve the situation. He wanted us to do that from the beginning when He gave us the threefold call to work.
Yep.
He didn't leave creation perfect in the sense of fully developed.
Right.
He put everything that was needed in there, but He wanted us in improving ourselves and perfecting ourselves to perfect his creation. So that's why he gave us dominion over the creatures in the language of Genesis. That's why he gave us the command to cultivate the earth so that we're able to draw computer chips even out of sand. And that's why he likewise, in perhaps his most beautiful commandment of all, said increase and multiply, in which we are able to exercise a vocation to love and, in cooperating with God, bring together new human beings, right, made not only in God's image and likeness, but in the mom's and the dad's image and likeness too. So we have built in our nature from the very beginning this creative or this entrepreneurial dimension. And the church really takes that seriously, yep, encourages people to use it. And every once in a while, people want to take an easier path and say somebody else's mess to fix.
Mm.
But Jesus took on our nature all the way from heaven in order to enter our mess and clean us up.
Right.
And so we follow that crucified Savior into the mess.
You know, Father, you're speaking about work as a kind of pouring out of the self as a gift to others. I'm reminded of Gaudium et Spes, paragraph 24, right? That man only truly finds himself when he makes a gift of himself to another. John Paul II draws that out in his Theology of the Body. Now, all of that is truly beautiful doctrine. And then you take a look at especially a post-Christian, progressivist, liberalist world that seems to decry the burden of work, and so one is owed wages if one is unable and especially unwilling to work. Based on what you've just shared, that sounds like an affront to God's biblical plan for us.
It is. I don't think it's always intended to be an offense against God's plan. Sometimes people do things out of ignorance, and so I just start there. But it is a mistaken notion of what's really good for integral human development,
mm-hmm,
right? Which always has a personal dimension.
Right.
Whether we're dealing with the poor in developed areas, whether we're dealing with ourselves in very rich cultures, what the Lord wants is for us to be perfected in the work that we do.
Yeah.
And unless we're working hard, unless we're making a difference for others out of love, unless we're fulfilling the Lord's trifold command with whatever talents with which he's blessed us, we're going to be less human.
Yeah.
And so that's why, for example, the most recent popes, Pope Leo hasn't said anything on this yet, but Pope Francis, Pope Benedict, St. John Paul II, all said that we as human beings have got to be the chief protagonists in our own integral human development.
Yeah.
That we can't just look at helping others as giving them some objective
that's
good.
Right.
We need to involve them in the achievement of that good so that not only do we have family fed, but we've now helped that hungry family to acquire some of the skill sets by which they're going to be able to feed themselves and feed, hopefully, many others.
Right.
And so there's both an objective and a subjective dimension. And a lot of the progressives forget that crucially important subjective dimension, looking at people more or less as objects of our concern and our condescending help, rather than as subjects that if we give them the right tools, according to their human nature, most are going to be able to cooperate with their own betterment.
Right.
That's a much more important form of development.
You know, Father, the Frankfurt School did a tremendous amount to propagate this lie that man was nothing more than an instrument and subject of the state, and that the state holds the authority, that what you're telling us, God holds first, and therefore human agency is called to exercise. And then you look at John Paul II, who not only spoke favorably about free markets, but with virtue, and then Laborans Exercens. I think it's paragraph 25 where he talks about man as co-creator.
Mm-hmm.
Like you mentioned, God didn't leave creation perfect. Man gets to do something, create wealth, and create a better living condition.
One of the difficulties in intellectual history have come from the abstractions that we make about everything, but also about who we are as human beings. Sometimes there have been the abstractions that homo faber, that we're just what we make.
Yes.
Other times we've got homo economicus, which we're reducing just to our economic productivity. We're much, much bigger than that. And in that beautiful encyclical on human work that you described, St. John Paul II told us in Laborum Exercens that there is both a transitive and an intransitive notion of our work.
Yep.
We have that in most languages. There's a different word to make something from making ourselves. So, for example, in Spanish, you've got hacer and actuar.
Yes.
In Latin, You've got facere and agere. I could go through the other languages, won't bore you, all our listeners. But there's this different notion that in making something, we're also creating ourselves. That's the latter part is the intransitive dimension of work. That, John Paul II underlined, is the more important aspect of work. God has given us tasks to do because it's through doing those well that we're going to become more and more His divine image and at the same time more and more human. So we've got to take that seriously. And sometimes we've got the progressives who reduce man. Sometimes we've likewise got the conservatives who reduce man because we're not really focused on developing these individual people. Uh-huh. They're not just recipients of our service and our care, but how are we going to be able to motivate them in such a way to be able to take up their own responsibilities? And we just can't fire out a dictate.
Yeah.
Some of the times we have to give the skill sets. Sometimes we have to
create the structure.
All of that. And like, for example, when I look at the way sometimes we treat immigrants, we're not talking about pseudo-terrorists immigrating from places spur terrorists. We're talking about people who just want to come here and work hard. But sometimes they just need a little training. Sometimes they just need a break. And we've got to be willing to help them truly grow, because when they're growing as human beings, they're strengthening our whole republic, they're strengthening our church, and everything else like this. And so, regardless of from where we start with big political questions, what we all should be looking to do is, how can I develop myself as I help others develop themselves, as together we try to develop the extraordinary gifts that the Lord has given us in the world He's blessed.
For the sake of building the common good and the flourishing of human societies and nations. Father, thank you for making the time to speak with us.
Great to be with you, Marcus, and with everybody listening to us today.
My guest has been Monsignor Roger Landry. He is priest of the Diocese of Fall River, Massachusetts, National Director of the Pontifical Mission Societies in the United States, and he's one of the professors here at Acton University 2025. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Hi, I'm Father Chris Alar of the Marian Fathers of the Immaculate Conception. My new book, Understanding the Sacraments, unpacks the extraordinary gifts unique to the Catholic Church. Ever wonder why we baptize infants? Is confession in the Bible? And must wives be subordinate to their husbands? The answers to these more hot-button questions about the sacraments are on sale now from Marian Press at shopmercy.org. God bless you.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes, without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
No one should ever have to choose between feeding their family and keeping their heat on. Impossible questions like rent or diapers demand answers every day, likely in your very own neighborhood, but you can help. Hope Clinic partners with you to provide free medical, dental, food, and behavioral health care, all in Jesus' name. While others face impossible choices, your choice is an easy one. Partner with Hope Clinic today. Find out how at www.thehopeclinic.org.
Why does the Catholic Church obligate its members to attend Mass on Sundays? For Christians, Sunday, the first day of the week, or the eighth day, replaces the seventh day, the Sabbath, as the day to reserve for worshiping God. The Sabbath represents the completion of the first creation. When Jesus Christ arose from the dead on Sunday, He inaugurated the new creation. Thus, Sunday became the Lord's Day and is now the foremost holy day of obligation in the universal church, as we are told in the Catholic Catechism. We are bound to attend Mass under pain of grave sin unless there is a serious reason for not doing so. Sundays are also called to be a day of rest. Christians are bound to abstain from work which impedes worshiping God and the joy of the Lord's Day. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter, coming to you from Acton University 2025, where, as I've been mentioning, I'm blessed to be part of a program that seeks to bring about the intersection of faith, religion, and encountering culture, politics, art, economics, business. And joining me to have a further conversation about this is one of the professors. He's a regular professor at Acton. His name is Andreas Wittmer. He's the director of the Art in Carlisle Chioka Center for Principal Entrepreneurship at the Catholic University of America. And he's presenting two courses, one of which is called Principled Entrepreneurship, Entrepreneurship, Creativity, and Faith and Work Culture. Andreas, thank you for being here. How are you?
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I want to begin with this notion of what entrepreneurship ought to look like. Now, this comes directly from your book, I understand.
Yeah.
But even in your course and in a proper way of thinking about entrepreneurship and the work of the human person, this language of co-creatorship means that principles undergird the enterprise of being an entrepreneur. You see a need, you seek to fill a need for the right reasons. I'd like to begin there.
So the co-creation, the principle idea, I had this great privilege in my life to have known St. John Paul II. I served him in the Swiss Guards.
Yep.
And he has, of course, influenced my life tremendously. It's not like that I had like these sit-down dinners with him or something, but you're always in the room when he talks.
Uh-huh.
And that affects you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One of the things he talked a lot about in the 80s, well, he talked about a lot during his life, is this, what he called the theology of the body. So much of what I do today is inspired by him, and I apply the theology of the body to business.
Uh-huh.
Now, specifically, the way this works in this idea of co-creation is that he would explain that when God created man, man is the first animal that he created where he said, I want to create somebody in my image,
right,
and likeness, and not before God created all these animals and take clay and form them, and off they go. And a beautiful image. John Paul would have fun describing the creativity of God there, and the creativity of the Trinity, which this is a discussion. This is an idea, and then it's realized and into reality, into the physical reality, until God said, let us make somebody in our image and likeness. And what did he do? He takes, again, the clay and builds us exactly like the animal. So we're exactly like the animal, except at the end, he breathes his spirit into us.
Right.
Didn't do that to the animals. So when he breathed the spirit into us, he takes us aside and he says, you are now my representative down here. You continue, the stewardship mandate, you now continue the work I have begun of creation. So you're my representative, you continue creation, and we will call that work. So what we do, when I don't care if you're listening to this and you're cooking a meal right now, if you're cleaning the floor, if you make a bed, or if you run a $100 million company, you are continuing creation by what you do physically. That is one of the core understandings that we have to have of work, that per se in the beginning, when I do this work, I clean a room, I create order, that's like God saying, let there be light.
Right.
And you're doing that, again, with an understanding and then executing this. It's so important to understand that this is what work is all about. this contrasts a lot with what we do today and how we look at work today. Every theory of work, of business today, only looks at the outcome.
That's right, utilitarian.
And Catholic understanding of work doesn't just do that. Of course there's an outcome, but it looks at the work path itself. Work itself has to be holy. And it is when we work in a way where we imitate God, where we continue God's creation mm-hmm. in imitation of Him, because when you imitate somebody, you become more like them.
Right.
And how is God? God is holy. When we work to create goods that are truly good, services that truly serve, then we imitate God, who, by the way, every evening said, and He saw that it was good.
Yep.
Right? And if we do this, if we work like that, we become more like God, and that is part of our path to holiness.
Right.
I'd say this is one of the key things that John Paul taught. That is forgotten today. Our culture doesn't do this, but it would fit very well. You don't have to change anything else. It would fit into our system very well. And that is the core of principled entrepreneurship. And from there, then, I go, okay, that means there's certain pillars along this. And I have five pillars that I describe on that. I'm sorry this is a long description, but it's one of these things that people don't understand what the Catholic view of work is. Why would the church say there is a right to work? Because it's part of our path to holiness. But the church also says there's a duty to
yes.
work, because it is a part of our path to holiness. So there's a lot of misunderstandings out there, and I think we have a long way to go to really explain that to our community.
We've seen a great permeation of these anti-Christian, frankly, anti-Christian mm-hmm. ideologies about the notion of work. You see some origins of this strain of thought in Das Kapital, and then eventually, you know, Engels in some of his ancillary
of
writings, right? But then the Frankfurt School really picks it up
mm-hmm.
and then makes sure that it gets proliferated subtly.
Yeah.
And so now work is seen as this oppressive thing. That's the narrative, that work is this
yeah.
oppressive thing, that especially if you are part of this class that has to work, it's this burden placed
yeah.
on you. And it robs it of its sanctifying dignity.
To me, that's the overall issue. That's what I would actually call the Marx, this kind of Marxism. Marx introduced, maybe he was not the first one, but he introduced this either or, like
yes.
to say, is this or that,
yeah.
and capital and labor, and one has to win, and it's an existential fight to the
yeah.
end. That is not how God created the world. There will never be a time where capital doesn't need labor and labor doesn't need capital, no matter, by the way, what they say about AI and anything like that. God made us complementary.
Yes.
Men need women, women need men, adults need children, children need adults. You know, He made us complementary, and in that sense, fruitful. The fruitful
yeah.
comes when complementary comes together. That's one of the things that Marx then denies. And that's where identity politics comes in, that's what is labor versus capital comes in. And I'm not faulting one particular side. I'm saying anybody who looks at the world in this vision of either or, us versus them, is missing the point
yes.
of how God actually made the world.
And so when I go back to your book, The Art of Principled Entrepreneurship, very early on in the book you make it very clear that the principled entrepreneur seeks out and pursues excellence at the service of others.
Mm-hmm.
Andreas, just that one sentence alone sounds tremendously alien to a post-Christian materialist
yeah.
worldview, which is how we do business today.
Yeah. I can, of course, extrapolate. It's funny, when you work, you get the luxury, you get the privilege to say a loaded sentence like that and get away with it, right? Because nobody can say, hey, explain. But let me explain. What I mean by that is that when we work, let me take a step back for a second. Say the sentence again.
Oh, sure. The principled entrepreneur
yeah.
places himself at the pursuit of excellence
yeah.
for the service
so
of others.
When you hear how I'm saying this, you place yourself between two things. You place yourself on the value line, in a way, of a product that's being created or a good
uh-huh.
or a service that's being created, and your personal excellence. Business is fundamentally a question that says, how may I help you? So I ask you, if I can use my talents, my God-given talents, hopefully something innate, something I'm just good at or I have a proclivity to,
yeah, yeah.
I can create value for you. I do something, I cook eggs, I can clean, I can do all kinds of things where you find it represents a value to you. Usually you actually find it more valuable in number than it costs me to supply it.
That's right.
The difference of that, I don't call the difference of that profit. I call that newly created value.
That's right.
And therefore it's new money.
Right. That's wealth that's been created.
It's new wealth. If we do it like this, where I create value for others, then money is actually one of the few unlimited resources we have.
Right.
Yet the world thinks it's a limited resource.
Right.
And so this whole idea of the, if I do this, I create value for you, but if I use my God-given talents and create that value, I actually grow in God's plan for me.
Right.
Because I'm doing the talents, the parable of the talents is being lived out.
Uh-huh.
That I'm using my talent, I invest it in Lord, the Lord looks for a return, namely that profitability. And I think that's a deeply beautiful meditation that we can do on the parable of the talents.
Right.
And apply that to our work.
Right.
It requires, that sentence, how may I help you, has everything in it that's needed for good business. It's you, it's me, and the help I create for you. It's total other directedness. And by giving like that, I actually grow in my own holiness.
Right.
It's the perfect equation.
And you're mirroring the brilliance of Sir John Paul Laborn's exercises, but then eventually we'll also see that thought comes out in Caritas in Veritate, particularly about work, drawing a kind of sanctification for the worker, even in the face of poverty, it creates meaning and purpose. I'm talking with Andreas Wittmer of the Catholic University of America, director of the Art and Carlyle Chioka Center, and he is a presenter here at Acton University. Continuing this conversation on the other side of the break, stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Experience an unforgettable evening with Grammy Award-winning artist Rebecca St. James. The concert is Tuesday, July 29th at 7 p.m. at St. Isidore Church in Macomb. Tickets start at just $23. Presented by St. Kieran and St. Isidore Catholic Churches. Purchase tickets online at stkieran.org. That's stkieran.org. Don't miss your chance to see Rebecca St. James live in concert. It's beautiful.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jingle.
In the eighth rule of St. Ignatius of Loyola's Discernment of Spirits, St. Ignatius invites us, during a time of spiritual desolation, to patient endurance and to think that spiritual consolation will return soon. But he also invites us to spiritual action against the spiritual desolation. St. Ignatius writes, diligently using the means against such desolation, as is said in the sixth rule. St. Ignatius's directional arrow, pointing back to the sixth rule, highlights the ongoing need to utilize all the spiritual tools available to us to reject spiritual desolation. Father Timothy Gallagher writes, these are the four means with which we are familiar: prayer, meditation, much examination, and suitable penitential gestures of courage. What spiritual tools will you diligently use during an experience of spiritual desolation?
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Have you ever thought about what you want written on your gravestone? We think about how we want others on earth to remember us, but perhaps our focus should be how God sees us. How we communicate in life impacts the conversations we'll have with God in death. Will we be remembered as bold communicators? I've been bold and sometimes outright aggressive in my talk, but without holiness, the boldness can come off as berating. Without holiness in our hearts, how can good commentary pass through our lips? How we speak can equate to how we live. I wrote about my dad's funeral shortly after he died in 2002. He didn't die a rich man or a famous man, but he died a good man, a faithful man, one ready to meet God the Father. His faith is what I remember most. In life, my dad communicated kindness and love. That kindness and love will always be remembered by those who knew him well. This has been a Christ Center communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha Garmo, a communications evangelist and host of Epiphany.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter, coming to you from Acton University 2025, talking with Andreas Wittmer, no stranger to this program. We're talking about principled entrepreneurship, creativity, and faith and work and culture. So, Andreas, you were talking earlier about how work has this amazing capacity to sanctify us because it allows us to participate in God's own creativity. You also, in your book, The Art of the Principal Entrepreneur, then go on to say this: wealth is not a zero-sum game. We treat wealth and resources, especially Ehrlich, you know, Ehrlich and this Malthusian thought, as if wealth and resources are zero-sum and human beings are parasites.
Yeah.
And it's such a misanthropic, destructive worldview.
It's not just that, it's a lie.
Yes.
And you know where lies come from. This is a very horrible lie that's there. Because that is, John Paul once talked about this and said, first of all, he objected to the idea to measure a human being by money. So, because the normal measure of poverty is to say, it's whatever they say, $1, right. $2 a day, and then you're poor. And he says, that's just, first of all, that's a demeaning way to measure somebody. And second of all, it's not a good measure in the first place, he says, because it begs the answer already. It has the answer in it already. It is a foregone conclusion because it represents it as if money was a finite resource.
Right.
And he called it an imagined finite resource, money. And therefore, the solution to, if I have, you know, $2 and you have $10, the just solution is for you to give me some of your money. But that's where this light goes with that problem statement.
Right, right, right.
The truth is that money is, of course, a transfer of value.
Yes.
And if I work and create something and in a way sell it or sell the work that I'm doing, I can create new money all the time.
Right, right, right.
The solution to poverty, therefore, is not the, quote, redistribution of wealth, but it is actually the creation of wealth.
Yes.
And as long as our focus of governments and society and the church to some extent is on the redistribution on wealth, we will never actually achieve prosperity because we're not unleashing the one investment in the world that has infinite return, which is the human being.
Yep. Thomas Sowell, in Basic Economics, he talks about how this notion, first of all, the fundamental principle of economics is scarcity. There's always a need that needs to be filled, right? But then he also goes on to say this, and it's so practical. We can't distribute if we don't first create.
That's the fallacy of this, that it's a hole that you go into. It's like Art Sioka that I'm writing about in The Principle of Entrepreneurship. The last principle is always think like an entrepreneur. And in it, he says in a way this his own parable, where he says, in life, and especially in agriculture, he was in wine, in the vineyard I have found two kinds of people only, creators and harvesters. And there's the harvesters to come in that just pillage the vineyard and just grab everything and then walk away and not show up until the next harvest. The creator will also harvest, but they stay with the vineyard and they create, and they toil the soil and they invest in the vineyard, which then will actually increase and give more, and they will be successful over the long term. The harvesters will actually destroy the vineyard in one act cycle, which is 7 years. And I think that's the very proof of the, in a sense, of the redistribution of just grabbing it and taking it, versus the creator of going in and saying, what is the solution actually, and then creating more of that.
Right.
And the other side of this, so John Paul said, don't measure people with money. And they said, well, okay, then what is a better measurement? Like, you can't say this is a bad measurement and not have a better idea. And he says, well, I have a better idea. And he says, to be poor is the state of being excluded from networks of productivity and exchange.
Right.
Because networks of productivity and exchange is what gives you the opportunity to create value,
right,
and therefore money, right? And so in there, think about this, if you listen to this at home, think about this, if you want to help a poorer person, somebody is poorer than you, integrate them into your networks of productivity and exchange. Now, the next question is, well, what is my network of productivity? Well, that's a good question. I want you to think about it. This is an open question. It's like asked by a philosopher, right? An open question. Show me your networks of productivity. Well, what kind of thing makes you more productive? What kind of thing, what kind of network that you're plugged in? Could actually be the internet, could be the cell phone, but it could also be your alma mater. It could be your friends where you call and say, hey, I need a favor. I need to talk to this guy. These are network of productivity. Integrate your friends into that network. What is a product? What is a network of exchange? Well, a network of exchange is a bank. It's the financial network. It's access to a market, a stock market. It's access to a physical market, to a distribution network and things like that. So if you want to say, how do I help somebody who's poorer, how can you give them access to your marketplace? Not a separate marketplace, your marketplace. Let's talk about how many people who want to help with poverty have a 401k, but there's no access to it, for no investment in it, into poorer areas, that they grow, that there's that your investment dollars, where you give them access to your network of productivity, you're not investing in it's I'm not even saying you have to invest in Africa or South America or something, but invest in companies that are in states or in businesses that aren't just the big business states, or aren't just finance and software, but real Main Street companies. Why don't you put money into that? If you want to help, put money into that. And not we're not talking about the superfluous money, the tithing or so. I'm talking about your everything, your everyday investment, that we, in that sense, vote with our feet, with our wallet. John Paul says that if we do this, we change the face of the world. Just if Catholics start to do this, to integrate the poor into these networks, you change the world.
I couldn't agree more. And that's precisely why, you know, people like Michael Novak, he would speak about how business is primarily a moral enterprise first. And it's not, so it's, he agrees that there's profit, but he says it's not about the profit. It's about it's about the service of the people, like you mentioned, these structures.
The thing with the profit, let me just, I do this spiel with my students in the room, where I pick on somebody and say, Marcus, how are your how's your white blood cell count today? Have you checked yet? No? Why not?
I don't
Marcus,
think I'm checking.
Do you know what happens if you don't have white blood cells? What? Wait, give me a guess. Give me a guess.
If, I'm susceptible to infections.
And then? What's the worst?
A common cold could kill me.
Basically, you're not checking on something that could make you die in a short period of time.
Right.
How can you live with yourself not checking white blood cells every day? Let me tell you what the answer is. The answer is that you didn't check your white blood cells because white blood cells are there if you drink water, move, have a healthy diet, sleep. It's a normal product of your body that it produces. But the thing is, you don't actually control it directly.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do what you're meant to do, it's a natural product.
Right?
That is what profit is to a business. I've run many businesses. I don't sit around, and I've tried it a couple of times to say, make profit, make profit, make profit. It doesn't work. It's not. You don't control it directly. It's literally like what white blood cells. Do a good product, do a good campaign or something, and then the product, the profit is a in a sense, a derivative of this. But I'm telling you, the profit has to be there. It's a non-negotiable. If I don't have profit in my company, the company will die.
Yep.
Just like your body with white blood cells. But as little meaning in life as white blood cells give to you during a normal day, profit gives to me running a business.
Right.
The moral or the real meaning in my life to run that company.
Right.
It's a very good analogy. It's a very good comparison.
Right.
And I find that people don't understand this until they've run a business themselves. And that's why every one of my students has to start a business, because they won't believe me if they haven't experienced it.
That's right. And that amazing program that you and Rebecca run in Catholic University of America, Business as a Vocation. And I want to draw back then to Santissimus Annus, the wisdom of someone whom you consider your spiritual father. He again reminds us that business is not about a profit.
Yeah.
It's about the service and the flourishing of the human person. So for everyone listening right now, we've become so utilitarian. It's in the water we drink.
Yeah.
We need to rethink how we think about industry, work, and even our work of welfare and philanthropy.
Yeah. And it's not, I want to be clear, I'm not saying white blood cells are not important.
It's just
giving the meaning. A company still dies if it's not profitable, because then you have, if it's not profitable, you have not invested the resources effectively. God is a God of abundance. If you imitate God with your company, God has never created anything that isn't profitable. Look at the world. It's a world of abundance. It's summertime now. You see everything flourishing and growing and everything, and we need to do the same. But on a deeper level, our work is our opportunity to imitate and become more like God. Uh-huh. Not with the outcome, but with the process. That's why I think that John Paul pointed to it so much and said, this is truly one of the strong opportunities, big opportunities. Think of how many hours a day we do work. And I don't just mean remunerative work, but somebody taking care of their spouse or right. their parents and taking care of children. This is truly God's work and truly the continuation of creation. And you are sort of hand in hand with God doing this work. He sustains you doing this work. And as you're doing it, pay attention to it, that you can grow ever more closer to God, be like God. You can actually be sure that if you're stepping on this path, that it is the path. It is the path to holiness. And John Paul just works, has so beautiful, such beautiful work. Look up some of his speeches always about Joseph the worker on the feast. He would have these homilies about work. And he knows because he did labor, you know, he worked in a quarry, he worked in all kinds of areas, and he knows even what hard physical labor is, and he helps us to reframe that from the merely physical to include the spiritual, which is highly rewarding.
My guest has been Andreas Widmer, director of the Art and Carlyle Chioka Center for Principal Entrepreneurship at the Catholic University of America and one of the presenters at Acton University 2025. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.